All right, we're ready to go. Commissioner Ainge, are you there?
I'm here.
Go ahead and start us off.
Okay, today we got a Board of Equalization meeting, and we have an agenda with, let me just get back to this item, six items on here. The first of which is to approve the minutes of the BOE meeting on July 2nd. There's also a review process report and a primary residential exemption changes report for the first three items. I don't know if someone would like to do a motion for the first two or the first three.
So I can move that we approve regular agenda items numbers 1, 2, and 3 as stated.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve items 1, 2, and 3. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes 3-0. Okay, item number 4 is a approve or deny owner's request to change taxable status from secondary residential to primary residential. Is there some staff comments on this one?
Mr. Chairman, Jim there? Okay,
yeah.
Sounds good.
Jim Stevens with the assessor's office. Mr. Schimberg has submitted an application along with documentation that shows that he conveyed ownership in a home in Summit County in May, and so he's requesting that his home in Provo be reinstated to a primary residence. He's provided documentation sufficient to approve the action.
Thank you. Looks good to me.
Okay. I would entertain a motion on item number 4.
I'll make a motion that we
approve. Regular agenda item number 4.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second to approve regular agenda item number 4. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. That carries unanimously. Item number 5 is a new application for privilege tax exemption.
This is Vicki Westergaard, Clerk Auditor's Office, and I believe Anthony is up there at this.
Yes.
Do you want to take this, Anthony?
Sure. I'll provide a little bit of background. We received an application from Michael Tevick for a privileged tax exemption. I don't know if Mr. Tevick is here or on Zoom. I don't see. So in his application, he is trying to get a hangar at the Provo City Airport exempted. And so he says that it's used for personal use. His occupation is that of an airplane mechanic. And if you look at his statements, it looks like he might be using it for his business instead. And so we just need some clarification. Is it actually like his personal hangar that he's using for his own planes, in which case he would be granted the application? If he's using it in relation to his business, then he would not be, and he would have to pay that taxes for that use. So
what kind of clarification are you looking for? What would be needed?
The use of the hangar, if it's business related or if it's for his own personal use with his own airplanes.
So it's just something that he writes out, or is it some sort of documentation? What would satisfy?
An email would satisfy. Vicki, did you mention to Mr. Tevick that there was questions?
I sent him a letter to come, and I also sent him a copy of Bert's email with the Zoom information, because when I tried to call him, his voicemail was full and I was unable to reach him about the Zoom meeting.
Okay. Because, yeah.
I'd hoped he would come so he could answer that question.
Generally, a phone call, just some kind of clarification email that he can provide us that let us know what it's actually. But right now, it's unclear from his application.
And so this phone number, this phone call is somebody else, I'm assuming. It's not the one that's lit up right now.
There's somebody on Zoom with a phone number, but that's what Commissioner Lee's referencing.
I think that's Commissioner Lee's number. Nope. Coming through that one.
No, I'm here in person.
No, but it's coming through. When you talk, it lights up that number.
Oh, for this room? Oh, okay.
Yeah, this room is going through the conference call phone number, but that conference call phone number is only for the room.
Okay. So he's not on. Okay.
So what do we need to do? Do we need to just continue this item?
Yeah, it sounds like to me to give him a chance to come to the next meeting before we make a decision.
Okay.
So we give him we give him another chance to come and just, I mean, you've already sent the information out to him, and so he didn't show up one more time, and I guess give him one more chance.
Yeah, that would probably be the best thing is to just continue for a month, give him a chance to respond to the county's request for additional information as to the use of the hangar. Just out of curiosity, and I'm not looking at the file, so I apologize, did we get copies of the financial statements that were required for the application, like tax statements or anything?
Yes, we did.
Yeah. And okay, that's what raised the concerns because he's an airplane mechanic, and so having hangars would be part of his job as well. So
did it show any kind of business deduction on the application for the hangar lease cost?
Let me look at that real quick.
Bert, I believe it's a new lease.
Okay.
That he just signed.
And so we're talking 2020 lease, but dealing with 2019
tax return.
Okay.
Correct.
Thank you.
Well, I'll make a motion then that we continue this for till our next Board of Equalization meeting.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes unanimously. Okay, now our final agenda item is approve or deny an application for review of Farmland Assessment Act status for William Child and Connie Hadfield.
And this is Craig Allred speaking. My father-in-law, Bill Child, is who you just referenced as it relates to that. And we've asked Mr. Sam Lambert of Ray Quinney Nebaker to join us, candidly, because he's an expert in the law and we're not experts in the law as it relates to greenbelt taxes. Sam, do you want to explain the criteria or would you like me to explain what took place?
Well, I just wondered, did the county employees have any information to give the board first, or do they want to hear from us first?
Usually we can hear from the county, so Diane's here. She can address that.
So this parcel is 0.79 acres, and it was taken off Greenbelt because there was insufficient acreage in this ownership, so it did not meet the 5 acres requirement. So parcels of land that are less than 5 acres cannot qualify unless they have identical legal ownership to a larger qualifying piece. At the time of the rollback, this did not have that. It was a separate ownership. Since then, they have recorded a deed that has put other land in the ownership that this parcel had previously been in. And then so they've changed it, and now they meet that requirement. But in order for a parcel of land that's less than 5 acres to qualify with larger acreage in identical legal ownership, it must show that that parcel has a direct relationship to the total agricultural enterprise and make a significant contribution to the total agriculture production. And in the standards of practice 7.3.7, it says, the process for determining if a parcel is making a significant contribution to total agricultural production can be approached in various ways. The governing principle should be that in those cases where an operation could not continue or would be seriously affected financially or functionally without the use of this parcel, there should be no question of eligibility. In cases where the non-contiguous parcel that is less than 5 acres contributes very little to the operation, either financially or functionally, the county assessor should seriously question the eligibility of the parcel. So I've gone out there and in your packets, Commissioner Lee and Ainge and Ivy, I've put aerial photos showing where that land is. A lot of the photos that were included by the landowner are photos of the other parcels that they've changed the ownership to. So I included the aerials of just the subject parcel, and kind of shows a relationship of what it looks like and where it's at. So
intensive farm use is not even a criteria in this. I mean, because we can go lower if we have intensive farm use, but that's not part of it.
Only if you show 80% of the owner's income comes from that parcel.
Right.
Yeah, which wouldn't meet the criteria for that.
Okay.
That's it.
Mr. Lambert or...
Sure. Thank you for letting us participate by Zoom. I would have liked to have been there in person, but unfortunately I'm in quarantine right now due to exposure to someone who later tested positive. So you're probably glad I'm not there.
Yep. Thank you.
So as was explained, there are three parcels that are used together for agricultural purposes, and in 2019, the owners intended to transfer all three parcels into their living trust, and due to an error, only one of the three parcels was included on the deed. And this year, when they found out that there was a problem, a new deed was recorded that transferred the other two parcels into the living trust. So at the beginning of 2019, all three parcels had the same owner, and now in 2020, all three parcels have the same owner, and the agricultural use has continued the same throughout. And so we're asking that clerical error of failing to transfer the other two parcels at the same time would not cause a rollback tax on the one parcel that was transferred.
So the clerical error,
perhaps you can,
if I can ask you the clerical error, can you go elaborate a little bit more on what you're claiming is a clerical error? Is that a county clerical error, or was it an error on the owner's part? How did that happen?
It was an error on the party who drafted the deed, transferring the parcel into the trust included only one of the three parcel numbers on the deed.
So it's not a county error then?
Not a county error, no.
Okay.
And Craig, perhaps you can speak to the agricultural use of the one parcel and how it's related to the other parcels.
Yeah, the one parcel that Ms. Garcia referenced with the 0.79 acres is located west of Springville. It's the only parcel that has covered. The use of that is hay storage to feed the livestock during the wintertime. It is the only parcel that has covered. There's a barn there that the hay is stored in. And then there are four other stalls where when there are sick cows or a sick calf or we had a bull with pink eye, that's where we bring them to be able to doctor them, keep them away from the other animals, depending on the issue of the cow or the livestock. And maybe if I can, speaking to the clerical error, a family member, we knew we needed to get the parcels into the living trust, all three. And a family member had a close friend that is an attorney. The attorney very willingly helped, but it was not his area of expertise. And he simply didn't put the additional two parcels. There was no malice. There were no issues in that regard. And none of us recognized it until we received the letter of the rollback tax. The use of all three parcels has been under Bill and Connie's ownership for over three decades. What they have done with it, I've been married to Bill's daughter for 34 and a half years, and I've hauled hay on the same piece of ground for 34 and a half years, helped doctor cows in the parcel in question That's where we stack the hay. That's where we doctor the cows for the last 34 years. So the use of the ground and the intent was never changed. It simply was the clerical error of a friend that's an attorney that doesn't deal in real estate, but as a friend, he chose to help.
I have a question. This is Diane. So you're saying that there's hay stored on there to feed the livestock. Where are the livestock? Are all of them kept on this parcel?
Not at all. The livestock in the summertime are on the 50 acres that is up in Juan Roads Canyon, Diamond Fork, up Spanish Fork Canyon. In the wintertime, there is property south of the IFA in Spanish Fork, between Spanish Fork and Payson, where the livestock are wintered. That 0.79 acres, again, is simply for hay storage for the wintertime, doctoring of livestock. That's the use of that 3/4 acre.
So if you didn't have this parcel, where would you store hay and where would you doctor animals?
We currently wouldn't, in the summertime, we would have a place to doctor animals on the ranch. There is a corral up there, but we don't have any covered hay storage anywhere else. And we don't have any place in the wintertime that we would doctor animals.
Okay. Thank you.
So for me, it sounds like they would meet the criteria that you had mentioned under it would seriously affect the capacity of production if this wasn't a greenbelt and they lost it, given the important role that it played here.
Yeah, Paul or Anthony, some comments there. How do you see that as well?
Well, as far as the parcel being non-contiguous and meeting the criteria, as mentioned, I think Commissioner Ivey stated his position. I think there's room to find that it does play a critical role. That's up to the board, which leaves the other issue of the name change, the clerical issue. Unfortunately, the Greenbelt Act doesn't really contemplate this kind of scenario. The BOE probably has enough latitude to make a decision on that issue today. If the BOE wanted to follow the Greenbelt statute in its most strict form, perhaps the property owner could look at the resolution that the Board of Commissioners passed in 2018 or 2019 regarding name changes. They could possibly go that route. But, you know, this clerical issue, it appears to be resolved. You know, like I said, Greenbelt statute doesn't really contemplate this sort of a thing, and it tends to be pretty strict. But I think the board has enough latitude to make a decision today on either way.
Yeah, for me, you know, in the Greenbelt assessment or the Farmland Assessment Act is designed, you know, for farmers, ranchers, to be able to have that break. And so I tend to always lean that direction if I can find a way to go that way if possible, especially when it's obvious that these properties are being used for their intended purposes, being for farmland production and agricultural production. I tend to look that way. The mistake, the clerical error that was made on the part of the individuals here does throw it into question, you know, and it's not a county issue. It's not a county clerical error that happened there. And then I tend to lean that way to see if we can, and if we can make a determination that way. But I'd like to, I would like to know, you know, on a legal standpoint from Paul and probably from Anthony and also from Diane, if we go that direction, if they feel comfortable with that. Or what would be the obstacles with it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so I have a question for Mr. Childs or his son-in-law. So in researching this and researching all the properties that are now in this ownership, this new trust ownership, I also noticed that there is a parcel that's less than 5 acres that is right next to Mr. Childs' home that is currently in Greenbelt, and it also would not meet the qualifications. So if they have access to one of these smaller pieces, what is the use of the other one? Does that make sense?
Hmm. Yeah, you want to talk? The parcel next to his home is, if you look at an aerial photo. Mm-hmm.
Yes, there's a horse or two in it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There's krells there, and that's where the horses are stored. There's usually...
So there's no way to store the hay there or to doctor cattle right next to his house?
We've tried that, and we've had challenges between the cows and the horses, saying it in a rancher's...
In the neighborhood.
And the neighborhood, yeah. They didn't appreciate the flies.
So is there animal rights? I mean, he can keep animals on that property next to his house. He has the residual animal rights in the city of Springville?
This parcel does have residual animal rights. Okay. There are houses all around the property. It's in a subdivision, 800 East, 340 North in Springville. It's in the middle of town.
Yeah. I'm just asking the difference, like which one is more vital and important, and couldn't their use be combined? Because it seems like two small little pieces separate from the main operation, they would both have to show that they contribute significantly and that they're vital to the operation. It just seems like maybe they could be combined in their use.
And again, the primary reason that livestock have not been kept there was because of neighbors complaining, threatening petitions, going to the city and completely eliminating the use of that. And so in a handshake, a gentleman's agreement said we would minimize the number of cows, well, no cows there, but minimize the number of horses there and use the other parcel that is west of Springville to keep the cows on where they're not residential neighbors.
This is Anthony Lube with the County Attorney's Office. And just to get at what Diana has been focusing on is that she's trying to look at the agricultural production of these two parcels because that plays a significant role in whether or not it qualifies for Greenbelt and also if it's integral to the production. And that's what she's asking these questions for. So she's trying to determine if that's what criteria if it's being met. My thought on this is that, you know, if the commission hears the evidence that's being presented about this parcel, the specific parcel, because Diane did mention another one that's next to it that's currently on Greenbelt. But since that one is not really at issue here, we're not going to really talk about that one. So just focusing on the one that's the application has been filed on. My thought is that this seems more like a green folder type thing where if the person has already been removed off of Greenbelt and it was due to a mistake, not from the county's error, then they would have to show one that they qualify for that parcel of land would be on Greenbelt and then mentioning to the commission why they should be, this is the best interest of the county, of the state, and in the best human interest to grant the exemption and forgive the taxes, penalty, and interest owed. Because something like this, as Paul mentioned, like the Greenbelt statute is pretty strict and rigid. It tries to make sure that, you know, a farmer or rancher has to comply with all the steps in order to qualify for that parcel. And if they don't meet it, it seems like that's, you know, they're off. And then if there's good justification, then they need to come to the commission and try to seek that exemption and then try to get that parcel back onto the Greenbelt status. So that's just my advice. Paul might give you some different counsel. But based off of what we've heard so far, it doesn't sound like they meet agricultural production, and it doesn't sound like what happens there is necessary or integral. It does sound like it's helpful and it's good, and but it sounds like there's other parcels that are more productive and where this stuff could be happening. So if this parcel all of a sudden was not part of their overall production or part of their ownership, they still would be fine. They still be able to conduct the same functions just on other property that they currently have.
Yeah, the primary challenge, I'm sorry, go ahead, Mr. Strange.
What caused the transfer of ownership? Was this just basic kind of estate planning stuff, or is there any anticipated sale or development of the property?
No, what caused it was Connie Child had been, Bill's spouse had been diagnosed with dementia. And in talking with, again, this friend of a family that was an attorney, he said, you need to do a little bit of estate planning with the property that you have so you don't end up in probate.
Okay. And, well, I just asked that because for me, I'm very sympathetic to some of these property transfers that happen. We've encountered this type of experience where it's not really any change of use of the property, but just a change of who holds title that triggers this rollback. And as long as that is done, not in anticipation of development, but like your circumstance, you have some family circumstances that require to be more mindful of estate planning. I think that's a very kind of unfortunate way to trigger this. And so, you know, listening to Anthony and Paul, I'm not exactly sure which mechanism we want to use, but I think that we need to just cast this vote in a way that gets you back into the same Greenbelt status you had prior to the living trust transfer.
Commissioner Lee earlier asked if I would be, what level of comfort level I have. And, you know, so often we sit here in our BOE meetings, and we do interpret this, you know, name change statute pretty strictly. We've done it for years. So I guess as far as my comfort level goes, I agree with Anthony that, you know, we should be consistent with the statute at BOE and allow the Board of Commissioners to kind of take in the other soft considerations. That's my point of view.
So if we deny today at the BOE, they can bring this petition back to the county commissioners where we then could have more leniency to approve it based on the other criteria, is kind of what you're saying.
Yeah, I think at BOE, you look at the technical law and you say, look, when we rolled them back, they only had one parcel that was less than an acre. That doesn't qualify. Then they come to the Board of Commissioners, and the Board of Commissioners takes in the whole big picture and says, yeah, we could forgive the rollback tax.
Okay.
I know it's additional steps for the parties, and that's unfortunate, but I think that helps with consistency, historical consistency for the Board of Equalization.
I mean, my biggest concerns, I think that this does play a critical role in their operation. They deserve it to be on Greenbelt as part of their larger operation. And so if we just simply need to go through another, you know, mechanism to make sure that continues to happen, I'm fine with that. But that's where I'm at. I'm happy to rule today in their favor, or if it's procedurally, we need to deny today and have them come before the Board of Commissioners, I'm fine with that as well.
And I could go either way, but the problem that I see is that if we rule in favor on this today, I think the end goal on this thing is is to get them back into the green belt. That's what I'm hearing all along, is that's kind of the end goal with it. And that's why I'm asking on a level of comfort. If we were to rule in favor of this today with this, I was just wondering if the assessor's office would then challenge that, you know, possibly to the state and then go a different route, or is it, if the goal is to get them back onto green belt status and it's easier for us to go to the, you know, go the other route, then I would be in favor of going the other route because I think it gives us more flexibility. But if it looks like, we can rule on this today and then be done with it, and that's kind of the goal, then I would rather just go that route.
Hi, this is Bert Garfield from the assessor's office. From the assessor's point of view, I believe we would like more evidence of their production and their agricultural use. So if you feel like, I think that the idea of going through the Board of Commissioners is not a bad idea, but I think that's the cleanest way of doing it. But I do think there needs to be more evidence so we can have a better comfort level of what's actually been happening on that property. So I think there's some proof, more proof needs to be made.
Okay. Then I would be in favor go ahead.
What could we provide for it if you could? We'd submitted pictures that had been suggested prior to this hearing.
Do you have any documentation?
And we've given oral testimony as to the use of the property.
Sorry, can you repeat that?
So usually, like if there's livestock on a property, we need to know how many, how long they're on the property. So if this is just for doctoring and you bring a bull on for 3 days and then the property is vacant and doesn't have any livestock on it for 3 or 4 or 5 months, that's the kind of information we need to know instead of just we bring animals from time to time here. A little more specific, because that's how we calculate animal unit months to do the qualifications.
And don't get us wrong, we're happy to put it back on greenbelt. But it's just a little unclear to us what's really happening.
But AUMs is usually contributed over the whole part, you know, the whole everything that's in the whole package, not just on
each parcel.
Well, yeah, but if you have them together, I mean, you're talking a little strip of land on this one.
That's why little strips usually don't qualify. That's why the State Tax Commission is strict on that.
It's just hard to imagine that much use on such a little.
Because it's less than 5 acres.
It's a little strip of land.
And so if they're on there for a short period of time, I mean, the AUMs on a little short period of time is going to be, one animal for a little period of time.
Qualify them quicker, whatever, easier, whatever. But we need to know something.
Yeah.
But it would be good if we had a little bit more background.
Mr. Allred has also explained that is the only place where they have winter hay storage, the capability to store winter hay for the winter. And so, you know, if you consider all the parcels together and the number of animals that are used and fed from those parcels, and also the fact that all of the animals essentially use that parcel as the medical area where they can care for those animals. How many days animals happen to be on that parcel to me is not significant. It's the fact that they need that area to, as a place they can take any of the animals that is sick. And do you also use that for calving, Craig?
Depending on how many cows are calving in the spring, yes.
So just to clarify the hay storage does not qualify any parcel for agriculture production. So storage of anything that's been produced on another piece of property, because the hay was not produced on this piece of property. So bringing hay from another piece of property and storing it on this piece does not qualify. So hay storage or grain storage or anything where the product was produced somewhere else and is just stored does not meet the qualifications for the Farmland Assessment Act, just to clarify. That's why I was focusing on the cattle and the livestock part.
mean, there are speaking, and I apologize, I'm not sure who had made the comment regarding additional evidence. I'm just thinking back over the years, there have been times through the winter, a few years ago, maybe three, that there was a bull that was sick. The bull cost $4,500, and the bull was doctored throughout the entire winter there, hoping to be able to use the bull in the spring after the heifers had calved. There's been other times that there have been livestock on. It's never for 3 days. It's usually for a period of weeks or months. And so it's not a, there is a cow on there for 3 days and you are trying to take care of pink eye and then it's gone because pink eye is contagious. It's there for a longer period of time.
Last year?
Speak up.
There was a bull on that property last winter that had foot rot that was there. He was there all until we needed to use it. We finally got him to the vet. He got over it, but he wasn't with the cows all year. He was down there. We don't keep the cows or the bulls with the cows all year. But we were able to get him treated and he was turned out with the cow. And that was just last winter.
Okay, well, it seems to me like maybe the cleanest way to go, to the is to deny this and bring it back up in our commission meeting, which would give us a little more opportunity to investigate and come forward, and that way, I think it'd possibly be better all the way around. That's my thoughts on it.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
A quick comment before you call for a motion. Mr. Child, Mr. Allred, Mr. Lambert, you might just need to know that if the board does deny this today, like has been mentioned, I think they're welcoming an application to waive the rollback tax. But an additional step you'll need to make is to reapply this parcel for the Greenbelt status through Diane Garcia. And to qualify, it will need, you'll need to establish the previous 2 years worth of qualifications. And I think that's what they're, the evidence they're looking for. I think the new application process will probably kind of address their concerns. Is that fair, Diane?
Correct. Yeah, we would just need more details on how it's used and how vital it is to the operation and what actually occurs on it aside from the storage of hay.
But if it is denied today, then the parcel is withdrawn and it would necessitate a new application.
Correct. Yes. Yes. They also, if it's denied today, yeah, they can also appeal to the state.
Right.
Okay. Would entertain a motion?
No. Sorry, Commissioner Ainge. This is Bert Harvey with the Clerk Auditor's Office. I did want to clarify one other thing before we move on. If it's denied today, they cannot make an application for 2020, though. That the first time they can make an application would be 2021.
Correct. Right, but the green folder process could address 2020.
Right. Are we ready for a motion?
Yes, sir.
I'll make a motion that we deny the application as stated on number 6 on our regular agenda.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to deny item number 6. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. That passes unanimously, and should be clear to the applicant that there's another remedy for them to seek, and the board is ready to entertain that. Okay, and a final motion.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We are now adjourned.